Welcome to IPC's podcast, Global Electronics, The Art of the Possible. I'm John Mitchell, podcast host and president and CEO of IPC, the global association that helps manufacturers build electronics better through proven standards, certification and training, advocacy, and industry intelligence. Digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world. We need to start talking about the policy, sustainability, network, and workforce adoptions integral to developing the factory of the future. We want to take a broad look at some of the opportunities and challenges of creating and running the factory of the future and talk one-on-one with the industry leaders and pioneers in manufacturing and management. Join us in exploring the factory of the future. I'm here with Nilesh Nayak, president of Eagle Circuits. Nilesh, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
We're going to talk a little bit about Factory of the Future, ask you a few questions, and have hopefully a very interesting discussion. So much of the discussion about this during this new decade has been about how digital technologies are transforming manufacturing and creating the fourth industrial revolution, or Industry 4.0. When you hear this, what does this mean to you?
What really relates to me is this fourth industrial revolution. I think it's a fascinating and it's an exciting time, and it's what's keeping me up at night, if I'm thinking about that, is how does that affect the electronics industry? Now, where I see the revolution today is there's two areas that I see. One is distributed manufacturing, and the other one is mass customization, and I think both of them are very neat. And this is where I see them coming. So if you think about distributed manufacturing, if you think about 3D printing, what 3D printing has allowed us to do is allowed anybody and everybody to have printers in their homes in all over the world. And a person in South Africa could design something, and me in Dallas, Texas can go print that.
Right.
So if you think about manufacturing, it becomes so distributed. Now, what comes hand in hand with that is if you think about mass customization. So if we're thinking about the world of blue jeans, right now Levi's decides to make a size 40, 32, or whatever in this mm-hmm. pattern. That's it. And guess what? Everybody uses this. By going to mass customization, the ability for me to go customize it for me and to be able to manufacture in quantities of one is absolutely incredible, and I think the future of manufacturing is that. And if you add distributed manufacturing to that, wow, that's truly a revolution, because now we're not building the big factories, we're actually building with small little factories which are in every town or every corner. So
it's like it's meeting two different needs. So you've got some companies that have proprietary technology, say, in your blue jean case, that maybe sure. they don't want to release so anybody can print their own.
Sure.
But I can still get it customized. But on the other hand, hey, where's the factory of the future? It's in the closet.
Absolutely.
Where my printer is printing, oh, I need something that does this. Let's grab that design and print it out.
Absolutely. And so it does change. It changes the entire manufacturing scenario for everybody and just the future for all of us, right? We can be building yeah. stuff customized for us at home if you want it. So.
Yeah, even electronics?
I'm trying to solve that, because then I'll be the next gazillionaire. So
so we're not quite there yet.
We're not there, but we're on the edge.
Okay.
I'm really fascinated about 3D printing. Mm-hmm. And what fascinates me about that is, again, we've got the ability to do 3D printing at home today. We don't have the conductive power, so to speak. But that really is just a matter of evolution. As we can add more current carrying capacity to traces that we can print, now I can actually run some power through that. And if I can do that, at a very elementary level, just think about creating an LED light or something. Mm-hmm. I could design my own LED light, 3D print it with the LEDs wherever I want them, and have it connected. Which is interesting, because if you think about the electronics industry and printed circuit boards and assembly, today they're two distinct industries, the mm-hmm. board manufacturing and assembling. This creates integrated manufacturing, and we're actually saying, hey, the end product is built in one single shot. So
some innovation in design to handle the power constraints,
sure.
but also possibly innovation in materials?
Definitely innovation in materials.
Okay.
And again, we're seeing some companies, right? There's a couple of startups that are doing that. And I think that is the future. That's going to be fascinating. So.
Very good. Now we just got to get it so it's $200 printer you can plug in, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Those will come. So.
Well, I actually, it was funny. A few weeks ago, I was watching HGTV with my wife, and the commercial was for a home 3D printer.
Yes.
They're advertising to put it in my house.
It's crazy.
It's getting there.
What has fascinated me most about that is if you think about the casts when we break our hands all this, now they're actually 3D printed. So they'll actually take a scan of your hand, if I've broken my hand, and they'll create an exoskeleton, so to speak, that is customized just for me. And the beautiful thing there is now that's plastic, so I can wash, I can bathe, I can do everything, and it's still functioning. So it's like, wow, we're at the cusp of a whole new way of looking at things.
Fascinating. All right, so let me shift with a little bit different question. So you've got veteran manufacturers who've built their businesses and factories on proprietary systems and processes, and it's believed that they can't quickly and easily upgrade their plants because they've made these investments. It is what it is. Which sectors or countries do you think will be the early adopters and implementers of next-generation manufacturing?
I think that's where we're setting up the perfect storm. So if you look at North America, I think the innovation is typically driven here. So I think it'll actually be created here. And if you look at from a bare board manufacturing, we're ready for a new way of building boards. And so with the exception of the big entities, which obviously have millions and millions of dollars invested in capital, so they have a barrier to just change because there is so much invested. So I think what you have is you've got small companies, innovative companies that are willing to say, hey, we can be disruptors. For a very low cost, we can actually be disruptive companies and try new stuff. And the key there is there's not much downside risk. So you said, why not? Let's try this. Let's see what happens. Which again, like I said in the prior thing, was it. Those are the things that get me excited and keep me up at night. Says, how can we solve this? Because these are opportunities for us to be very disruptive in a business that's quite mature. So
yeah. And as you say that, the thought that immediately comes to mind is, so you're probably not going to, in this smaller, say it's a smaller factory, print millions of something.
No.
But you may go, so I think of like aerospace or defense where they're printing 5 or 10 of something.
Absolutely.
Suddenly, if you could customize print that and turn it around, that's interesting.
And the thing there is it takes a different, now you're solving a problem or providing a solution, and you're not necessarily driven by, if you think about the Industrial Revolution with calling this revision 4, let's think about 3 or 2. And the mission in all those was, how do we drive efficiency and drive costs out of this whole process so that we can make more widgets at a lower cost? This is flipping it completely and says, hey, how do I make, again, quantities of one? And when I'm just doing quantities of one customized to this individual, time is not necessarily that critical, right? If it takes an extra 20 minutes or even an extra 2 hours.
Or an extra day. It's the time that you're going to ship something to you could still have it there.
Absolutely. So it's actually looking at the problem from a very different perspective. Well, and I think the small companies have that opportunity.
That might be industry 5.0.
Could very well be.
I mean, because 4.0 is really about this, connectivity, et cetera.
Sure.
And so suddenly, if now your industry 5.0 is really the distributed manufacturing or the individual manufacturer for low quantities might be, or maybe it's 4.5.
Good point. So if in that perspective, yes, 4.0 is letting just machines talk to each other. True. In that case, this might be a 5.0.
Maybe. That's fine. I'm happy. It's still about the future.
Totally about the future. Yes.
Very good. Do you see any particular sector or region that will be, you mentioned that you felt that it might be innovated here
North
in the
America.
U.S., but in terms of sectors then, that might be open to this?
I think it's going to have to be in the commercial space. Obviously, not the high reliability medical or defense space. That's obviously not going to be the case, but definitely on the commercial side.
We can't have people printing missile control systems in their basement.
Not quite.
Yeah, okay.
Not quite, but let's just think about disposable stuff. And so that's why I always think about the LEDs. It's a relatively safe little thing, not safe, but simple thing that I can print, and if it doesn't work, I'll go get another light, but it's not something that's going to...
And maybe the e-textiles piece.
E-textiles,
so you
exactly.
Combine them both and say, hey, now I've got my own LED printed across my hat,
Sure.
Just like people print their T-shirts.
Absolutely. And who wants to wear normal stuff when I can have customized stuff for me?
That's right.
Me. So, and again, a little bit of that is very North American centric. We like that. If we look at the whole thing, we're going down this experience side. Mm-hmm. So we've already gone past the fact that I own jeans, and that's plenty of them. Now I want something that differentiates me a little bit more. So I think we're the right market for that.
It's and right for me, and it's individualized to me.
Totally.
Yeah.
Definitely feeds my ego, so that's a good thing. So.
Gotcha. So we're in the midst of a data explosion.
Yes.
To the point that, you know, many companies, they don't even know what to do with the data they have, or all of it anyway. So what are some ways that you anticipate the manufacturing supply chain will harness data?
That's a great question. And for me, I think there's multiple opportunities. Again, the one side is with all this data, we can actually improve efficiencies and do that. But I think there's another challenge that we also have. And if we look specifically at the electronics manufacturing, we've got PWB manufacturing and assembly. What I've experienced or what I've noticed is even just part selection, a simple thing as a resistor. Today, again, I'm a little naive on this, due to lack of standards or it may be just a lack of standards, but there's 20 different chip resistor manufacturers and they call it 20 different things. Mm-hmm. So now I, as a designer, I'm picking XYZ's chip. But when I go to build it, I happen to have ABC's chip, and can I use it, not use it,
the interchangeability. The properties all the same, yeah.
Everything, form, function, everything is perfect. And so just from a data point, if you think about data and grabbing that data, there's so much room for improvement. And if we can make that a single thing, wow. It's maybe a shift change. It's a little bit of could be a standards issue, but if we can solve both of these, we can actually use that data to a huge advantage. And I would think saving just time, it's most probably a good, I don't know, maybe even an order of magnitude. I don't know.
So interesting. Yeah. I mean, every time I hear about big data, there's also the complication about, oh, it's not codified properly, or I
sure.
don't know how to use it, et cetera.
Sure.
So I think it is a real challenge that we're facing. But like you said, if we could be consistent about how it's coded, then we can leverage these systems to much, much greater effect.
Oh, absolutely. Because and think about a factory of the future. I may literally have this device in my inventory. It's made by a different company. Mm-hmm. And now my whole line gets shut down just because I don't have the exact part number.
Yeah.
And if we can just tighten that up, oh my,
yeah,
we can really have some fun. So
very good. So we live in an increasingly interconnected and globalized world, and the future of supply chain points toward fewer silos and more cross-collaboration. How can companies integrate themselves better within this kind of network?
You know, that's another great question. And I look at the history of our industry, and if I think about the OEMs from yesteryear, they were integrated manufacturing facilities. They had the design component, the fab component, the assembly component. So they had efficiencies.
Sometimes even the raw materials.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And because of that, they were efficient across the whole supply chain because they owned the whole supply chain. So it mattered to them that all of these people talked to each other and they actually came up with a product that worked for the benefit of the whole group. I think the silos, I think the future is exactly getting rid of those silos. I'm glad to say that if you look at the IPC and its mission, it's to say, hey, how do we get rid of these silos and actually create one integrated solution? My bias, because we're in the fabrication and design businesses, just because we're in both of them, we're forced to listen to our assembly guys and say, okay, what do you really want? Mm-hmm. So that my fab guys can adjust. And the more integrated we become, the much easier we make life on each other. The minute we're in silo mode, we're always pointing at each other, and we're in a different way. We've got our blinders on, and we're just not open to listening to the whole thing. So the better job we do of actually getting everybody to talk to each other and saying, hey, we're all part of a collective group, and the faster we can get there, the better we all are. So
on that journey to getting there,
yes.
What are some of the pitfalls? What are the things that are going to slow that journey up?
I think this gets quite philosophical, but I think the challenge there is because, again, when I was talking about these blinders that we wear, we have to recognize that we've actually got blinders on before we can even
admit the problem first.
Exactly, yeah. Right? So we struggle with that. And in the moment, it's like, well, no, this is what I need, and this is my company, and I really don't care about my up supplier or my down supplier. And it's like, no, you really have to be conscious of that thing. So it takes a little bit of work. It's not quite as easy as to do that because if we look at whether it's compensation schemes or everything, those are directed more at silo behavior. Mm. And it's like, hey, how do you cut purchasing costs? Well, here's the incentive to cut costs. So, well, at that point, that person is not really looking at, hey, look at the supply chain and see who's going to deliver me to me consistently. Mm-hmm. It's more like, who's giving me the better deal today? So it's a behavioral change.
Right. Those are behavioral and cultural changes don't necessarily change at the flick of a switch.
No. Yeah. We all say we do, but it takes a long time.
It takes some work. Very good. All right, so for my last question, what do you think as an industry we should be talking about more, but we aren't?
Another good question. And I think as I was thinking about that, we do spend a lot of time talking, and I kind of called it incremental change, right? There's always the going from version 4.0 to 4.1 to 4.2.
Right.
Sometimes we need to just say, hey, what does 5.0 look like or 6.0? And I think and it doesn't have to be a daily conversation, but every once in a while just having that conversation, it's quite amazing how it just gets the creativity thinking. It says, hey, let's look at this, and is there a different way of looking at this problem?
And if you're doing that, if you can have a pretty good idea of what version, 5.0 in this case may be, instead of making the investment of 4.1,
sure,
you might make a different investment because you have a clearer vision and
totally.
It might have a better utilization in the long run.
Yeah. Sure. And so I'll give you an example specifically for my factory. If we're a printed circuit board shop, so if we're looking at current technologies are direct imaging, mm-hmm. where we're printing onto resist, but we're using a laser. So we're embracing the digital technology, and we digitally are actually exposing this the resist. But I haven't removed steps. I could potentially say, hey, can I just digitally print resist directly
right
onto
there.
A panel? And I've actually taken three steps out of my manufacturing process, but one's incremental, the other one's totally dramatically different, and
jumping the
nobody
curve.
Wants to embrace that. Gotcha. It's hard to embrace that, so we struggle through that. So,
gotcha. I understand. Well, Nilesh, thank you very much for your time today and your insights on the Factory of the Future. You can also find more information on the Factory of the Future and other electronics industry news at ipc.org. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sean.